5 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre Lafon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CSU Channel Islands, we're fortunate today to have Dean Brian Sevier of the School of Education of CSU Channel Islands. Welcome.
Thank you, Neil. It's great to be here.
So you are the Dean of the School of Education.
That's right.
What does a dean do?
Well, a dean, besides the overall fiscal management of the School of Ed, really is the person that's looking at the vision and helping the faculty really define the vision in community with our partners and our, you know, the folks that we serve, and really ensuring that our students experience that vision and have an amazing experience as they traverse our School of Education.
And do you get to get into the classroom? Do you get to teach at all?
I don't formally teach, but I do. On occasion, faculty will ask me to step in and teach. I taught a couple of guest classes last year, which was amazing. It's incredible to – I always try to keep, even when I was an associate dean, I tried to keep at least a little bit of a finger on the pulse of the classroom, because – you know, it's my passion, and it's why I'm in education to begin with. So,
and you don't have to read blue books.
That's right. I don't have to test. I don't have to do any of that.
So, one of the most interesting things about CSU Channel Islands that I found is that there's a very clear attempt to be collaborative between departments. A professor could say to a different department completely, I have an idea, and I think it would make sense to join up for a particular project. And I think that's really, you know, wonderful for an institution to be that flexible.
Yes.
So as dean, is that something that you are involved with, to make sure that people feel opportunity between departments?
It is. I would say, you know, the integrated programs. So in the School of Ed, we actually have a major called Liberal Studies, and that is the sort of defining interdepartmental program, integrated program across the university. So it's authentically built that way, that classes, that the students take classes not only across disciplines, but they take classes and courses that are specifically integrated across. So music and libraries, for example. And I'm still learning. This is my first year at Cal State Channel Islands, but I'm still learning on how, you know, their sort of curricular efforts to increase that interdisciplinary work. But every student in the liberal studies major, the nature of the program is interdisciplinary from day one.
You know, if you read some of the stories about what's wrong with our school, our you know, K through 12 system, it sounds like nobody really knows what to do. I mean, everyone has a different idea. But you're teaching, so, you know, it's like you must have, if you're going someplace, you have to have a map of where you're going. And yet,
yes,
some of the press is talking about, we don't really know what to do. Do you have a clear vision of what it would take to make our country have the kind of first-class education system it had in the 60s?
Yeah, that's a big question. I think what we've seen in the past few years, especially if you look at the Common Core movement and Next Generation Science Standards movement, there's a movement towards really pushing towards deeper and authentic conceptual understanding for students, that we live in the information age, and every student, you know, even in middle schools and elementary schools now, can access information whenever they need to. But, you know, they can answer an information, or what we call a closed end or convergent question, in 5 seconds. But the deeper understanding of what the questions are getting at, right? So the deeper meanings behind, you know, those questions and what mathematics is all about from a conceptual perspective rather than a procedural one. That's where we're going, I think. And it's a big shift. It's a big shift instructionally. It's a big shift to go from, like I said, very closed-end sort of work to very open-ended questions, students' exploration, but really getting to understand the deeper concepts. So what do writers actually do? What is the author's craft? And then how do mathematicians think? And so we used to talk about, I led the standards and implementation team for the Department of Education for Colorado for almost 5 years. And our work that ended in 2015, our work was really to talk to teachers about, so how do you move from regurgitation and repetition towards what is really the new direction, and that's called disciplinary literacy. So in every sort of discipline, you are thinking like, talking like, arguing like a historian, a geographer, a political scientist, a mathematician. That's where the world has sort of gone. This is nothing new in education. Conceptual understanding or deepening conceptual understanding has been around since John Dewey. But it's really now in the information age, it's no longer, that's a nice alternative. It's an imperative, right? If students can access any kind of information at the drop of a hat, they have to be able to actually, you know, bring that information together and put it together in ways that actually make sense in terms of what we're actually trying to get them to understand conceptually for all those sorts of disciplines.
So you look at that international study that comes out every 2 years, mm. and I think last year America was 34th or 35th mm. in the world. Why are the outcomes so bad?
Yeah, I would think, I think it does get back to that. It get back to that movement. So you look at the movement around the Common Core, and political stuff aside, the movement, if you look at where those standards are sort of pushing, I mean, they're really coming off of a Singapore model, a Finland model, and really thinking about, you know, it's no longer just about parsing sentences and, you know, that sort of breaking down all those things into bits and bits and bits and smaller bits of information. It is about using that. So we always used to say in the Department of Ed that, yes, of course, you need those skills and you need that information. That's really the mental Velcro that helps you get to those larger conceptual understandings. But without that, our students are just getting better at, maybe not even better at, reproducing. You know, you talked about a blue book. Students get better at doing those Scantron tests or, you know, multiple choice tests, which is not going to prepare them for the future and what they're actually doing in the workforce and in college.
How was the result in Colorado as you were walking out the door? What was it?
It's a work in progress. It's, you know, I think the big sort of the twin sort of movements that are happening in education right now around conceptual understanding and really about, thinking about students in terms of their abilities and not, right, you know, not limiting students by test scores or by, you know, where they've been or the zip code that they live in, but really thinking about every student as in a growth mindset, with Carol Dweck's work in particular, really thinking from a growth mindset and from a conceptual understanding mindset. Those are the sort of twin and conjoined, in my book, movements going forward. I think, you know, in Colorado, we led a huge teacher-driven curriculum project where about 7,000 teachers, from across the state participated, from 178 school districts, participated in writing curriculum that was really focused on new conceptual understanding. That work, you know, has been featured across the country. It was an amazing effort, and I think they're in the process of still trying to stand that up, as I think most states across the country are really trying to stand up. What does it mean to think conceptually? What does it mean to act like an artist? To see the world like an artist? To represent the world like an artist? And that's the other sort of piece that you're getting these great standards in here in California. You have ones as well. That it's, you know, 10 standards, right? You're thinking about all those standards from the arts to PE to English to math, all as core subjects, not as add-ons.
You know, one of the problems, I guess, you have is you have what's called parents. and, you know, if you were to make this we had this discussion in front of a bunch of parents in the fifth grade, even in Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. I'm sure there'd be some pushback among parents who aren't necessarily up to the latest in education theory.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Common Core, we saw it where, you know, parents couldn't help their own kids with homework, so they felt that maybe this was... So I guess that you've got, you know, children, you've got the science of teaching, and then you've got parents, and government, and this is not a simple problem. Even if it were a simple problem, you've got a lot of players involved.
That's right. I think that's one of the components. Parents and families are one of the components that get left out all too often. And when I was in Colorado, I was part of the State Advisory Council for Parent Involvement in Education, and out of that work. At the same time we were doing the curriculum work, we were also bringing together PTAs and PTOs from across the state to write parent-friendly guides for all of the standards so that – and this is – they even have this available at the National PTA now. So you can see, right, and sometimes they're called, here's what's in your kid's backpack. You'll look at those sort of one-pagers that actually walk parents through what the new expectations are at first and second and third and fourth grade for all the different content areas of the standards. And I think that's important, right? And I think one of the interesting things that's happened with Common Core and other kinds of standards is you'll see these things, and you've probably seen them on the internet, where they'll say, this is a Common Core math problem. Well, there's really no such thing as a Common Core math problem. Common Core is an approach to mathematics instruction. And so people package these things and sell these things as here's a Common Core mathematics unit. And people, right, they read that and think, I can't understand this. And therefore, the Common Core mathematics is, right, something foreign and something new. And really thinking conceptually about what multiplication actually means rather than reproducing that algorithm, that procedure, that's been around for a long, long time. It's just been sort of codified in the Common Core standards. But how teachers teach, that's the standards don't tell teachers how to teach. And so that's, I think, one of the key things we communicated to parents across the state and across the country. The standards are really setting a floor, not a ceiling, for what we expect kids to be able to know, do, and understand. That's it. Those, the instructional practices, the work in the classroom, that's still up to the teacher. That's still up to the principal. And so that's where I think we have to get that clear understanding that there isn't this set of multiplication problems or ways of looking at literature that the Common Core dictates, or any standards dictate for that matter.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Brian Sevier, who is the Dean of the School of Education at Cal State University, Channel Islands. So we talk about education. We typically, I know when I was going to school, you taught teachers to teach from the fifth grade, five-year-olds, kindergarten up. And then it was three-year-olds. And, you know, now there's some theory in terms of the neuroscience that you should be teaching them in vitro. How far back can we go, and how important it is to have teaching skills when the child is 6 months old, 1 year old?
I think that's the crucial sort of new wave, and you talked about the new science. I think that's right. I come from a line of my mother was an early childhood educator, and so the idea that and it's one of the most compelling things about bringing me to Channel Islands and the School of Education is that the early childhood program in our School of Education is one of the few in the state that actually where students get an experience working from infant toddlers all the way up to age eight, so all the way up to third grade. And I think that's, you know, our students in early childhood, which is like, I think it's the sixth, last year it was the fifth, I think this year it's the sixth largest major on campus. They get those experiences from birth to age eight and all the pedagogical experiences along that continuum. So I think it's crucial. I think it's where we're going in terms of preparation.
You know, what's interesting is the science is pretty clear that brain development takes place really young. And so I guess, you know, back when I was a kid, people thought you could have them play in the sand until they were in kindergarten. I guess that's changing now. And there needs to be, you know, particularly from the parent standpoint, maybe not in the school setting, but to teach the parents about what you need to do to make sure your child is ready for prime time.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, there's so much work to be done in terms of how schools better connect with parents in terms of cognitive, socio-emotional development. But there's also the other side of that. We talk about school readiness all the time in terms of, you know, children's readiness for schools. But there's the other side of that as well, and the readiness of schools for children. So, and that's also reaching down into those, you know, younger and younger ages to make sure the school is ready to actually bring in students from diverse linguistic backgrounds, from diverse learning backgrounds, from diverse cultural context, to actually take what they bring to school as a value, as an asset, and to build on that. I think that's those sort of combined sort of works, so both working on the parent side in terms of here's what you can be doing at home, here's what you can be doing with your students to build those school readiness skills, but also listening to parents and listening to communities about what schools need to be doing to include their students in authentic ways and actually bringing them more into the classroom in ways that make that instruction relevant and meaningful for kids at younger and younger ages.
So the opportunities to go to school at CSU Channel Islands is to learn about toddlers all the way up to 12th grade. I mean, what is the curriculum focused on, the whole spectrum?
So, in the early childhood major, the focus is on birth to third grade or age eight, and then you also have differentiated credential programs. So, you have what's called the multiple subject credential program, which is for elementary school age, goes up to sixth grade. And then you have a single subject credential program that is your middle school and your high school instruction. So those are single subject credential programs.
Is that outside the bachelor's degree, or that's part of the bachelor's degree?
Yeah, well, so you can't major in education in the state of California. So you do, most people have done for the past, 30 years or so, they do what's called post-bac credentials. So they finish their bachelor's in a particular area. And for the elementary students, it's typically liberal studies. It can be, a lot of times it's psychology, sociology. But for the single subject folks, they'll major in history or geography or mathematics and then do their post-baccalaureate credential program. That's changed a little bit in the last year. So there are now, and we're just starting one this fall, what are called integrated education programs, or ITEP. And it is a combined bachelor's degree and credential program. So you earn your bachelor's degree and your credential in 4 years. So it's not majoring in education, but it's close to that. And right now it's just for multiple subject. So it's just for elementary age.
Well, I'm glad, because before you said that, I was about to say that makes no sense. Given the whole idea of paying for school and then having to finish a four-year degree and not being able to get a job because you didn't get your credential is about as crazy as you can get. Mm-hmm. So is this integrated, this program, available for all the CSU schools?
No. So some are still currently – they're all able to do it, but they don't all have the program yet. Some are currently developing it. Some have been doing it for years. They've had integrated programs that were approved at the state level for a number of years. This is our first year starting with freshmen and transfer students who can start pursuing a four-year. But one of the issues around that, you could probably think about this just for – is what happens to those students. You mentioned getting a job. What happens to them when they finish a bachelor's degree and a credential? So the way salaries are structured in school districts, typically most students are coming in, they've got their bachelor's, now they have additional 30 to 40 units post-bac, which are technically graduate school hours. So the salary scale rewards them for that. So they come in with a bachelor's degree plus 30 units. Now you're going to have students coming out with a bachelor's degree having taken the same exact credential courses, but they don't have that additional 30 to 40 units. So what will districts do around paying those students? What will their salary scale look like for just having a bachelor's degree despite having the bachelor's and the credential?
So when someone gets out of the program but hasn't gotten all the credentials, can they actually still teach but get salary for a minute?
Right now, yeah. No. So if they came out with a bachelor's with no credential, yeah. No.
I went to graduation this year, which was great.
And
a large number of the graduates, with the smiles in their hats were from the education department.
Yes.
How many of them are going to be able to work in June, in September?
So the ones that you saw walk, yeah. Those were all post-bac students.
Because?
They had finished their credential.
So if you just get a four-year degree, you don't get to walk?
You can't get a four-year degree in education.
But they got a degree in something.
Yes.
Okay. So, and if they want to be a teacher, so this is semantics.
No.
They got a degree in liberal arts of some sort, and they want to be a teacher, but they're not going to be able to work as a teacher until they go back and do 30 credits more, which is a year and a half, isn't it?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's right.
But at least it's worth it because the highest paid jobs in America are teachers, right?
Hands down.
It all works out. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Brian Sevier, Dean of the School of Education at Cal State University, Channel Islands. So, speaking of education, where did you grow up, and what made you want to be an educator?
I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, so I'm an LA Unified kid, and I never thought about being a teacher. So it was a very circuitous route to education. So my I'm a first-generation college student. I attended Cal State LA, did my bachelor's at Cal State LA, and actually was a Russian history, Russian studies major. No thought of education at all, except, you know, I did some volunteer work because, you know, my mom, as I mentioned, my mom was a paraprofessional in an early childhood center. And so when I was in college, I did a little bit of volunteering there, but that wasn't anything to do with thinking about a career.
Well, if you studied Russian, was there collusion or not?
I'm not touching that.
The transition from majoring in Russian to teaching is quite a jump.
Yeah.
So what was the spark?
Well, it was sort of a retroactive spark. So when I was the reason I think I can really trace my decision to even go to college to my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Levine, who I've been trying to find ever since I was in fifth grade. I've written articles about her and talked about her everywhere. And she changed my life. I mean, she spoke to us 10-year-olds about college, that we should go to college, what college was like, what it can do for you. And, you know, we were in a small, you know, teeny school in San Fernando Valley, and my parents didn't go to college, obviously, and none of my friends' parents went to college. And so I kept that memory alive. And then, you know, when I was I got to college and I was pursuing, you know, my interests and got accepted into graduate school after Cal State LA and a really prestigious school on the East Coast. And I was all set to work with one of my idols, a person who had written about Soviet and Russia history. And I was to be his doctoral student. And, you know, I came out of, growing up in San Fernando Valley, you know, surrounded by diversity, and Cal State LA consistently ranks, I don't know if they're number one anymore, but when I was there, they were the most diverse college campus in the country. And I'm sure they're still in the top 10. And that was my life growing up. And so I got to this school, and there was a very interesting interaction with this professor that I had wanted to work with, where one of the doctoral students asked a question about, you know, where are the students of color on campus? And it just so happened that, I'm telling this story, but it just so happened at that time there were two cafeteria workers walking by and of color. And he looked at us and said, do you want to sit by that in your classroom? And it was one of those moments, right? It was one of those moments I went back to my little tiny, you know, rental with no bathroom, a shared bathroom on the fourth floor. And I just sat and I thought about all those people in my life, in my educational life, who had, whether they knew it or not, had paved the way for me to be sitting where I was. And that was the transformative moment that I up at that time, I'd only experienced education as this powerful force for good, and that teachers saw you as capable and saw students as the next generation, the people they were trying to instill and inspire. And here was this person that I, you know, as a doctoral student, I'd be working with this person for years. And I left 2 days later. I packed my bags and went back home to San Fernando Valley, regrouped, rethought where I was and how I got there. And through across that was education. And that's how I became a fourth grade teacher. I went back and got my teaching license and started teaching, loved teaching fourth grade. And it's been...
What's amazing is at the graduation this year, at the beginning, everyone who was a first generation graduate was asked to stand up, and it looked to me like it was 75% of the people stood up. So you must be quite a role model for the kids to see that you're the dean and you're like them.
Yeah. It was funny. We just had a meeting, one of our faculty or leadership retreat meetings on Monday, and we were talking about social mobility index, and Cal State Channel Islands is number 18 in the country. And if you look at the top 25, 12 of the schools in the top 25 are Cal State schools, social mobility index, meaning the improvements they make to students' lives. And Cal State LA is in the top 10. And that was announced, and I was like, that's my school, and I'm standing here because of that. And but yeah, I when the job came up, when the dean's job at Cal State Channel Islands came up, I was working in Colorado. I was an associate dean, and loving being an associate dean. But I always knew if a chance came to return to the Cal State system and give back to the system that has given me so much, that I would at least try. And it's, you talk about their role models for me. I look at the students and I think this is incredible what they're doing, and that they're here every day, and some are working two jobs. And yeah, I see myself in them. I mean, my senior year, I had three jobs, and I see myself every day in them. And it's a constant source of inspiration for me. So,
yeah, it would also, you know, not only is the CSU system an excellent institution, but it has so many advantages over the UC system. It's much cheaper. The teachers are there to teach, not necessarily to write grants and work for the Department of Defense, just to take a slap at UCSB, which is a wonderful school. But from a student standpoint,
they're in the top 25 in social mobility index as well.
Yes, but to be a student at CSU is economically a much more feasible opportunity than for other schools. So it's really a great deal.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it sits between community colleges and this UC system. And one of the things that that we're lucky to have is Channel Islands, which is a really closely held secret. I mean, people think about CSU, they think of going up to San Luis Obispo.
Yeah,
they don't realize that there's a closer place in Goleta. You know, CSU has a whole bunch of classrooms here, right here in Santa Barbara.
That's right.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Brian Sevier, who is the Dean of the School of Education at Cal State University, Channel Islands. And, you know, one of the things about teaching, besides that, you know, whether it's Common Core, or whether it's mathematics, or whether it's social studies, is you're dealing with a group of kids who have all kinds of pressures. You know, the kids, particularly in this community, they don't know if they're going to come home and their parents are going to be taken away by the government because they're not legal, or some kids are bullying them. So in order to be a teacher today, you have to be more than somebody who knows the academics. You almost have to be a psychologist. And I know you mentioned before that there's some overlap between psychology and education. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think you're right. I think, you know, we're at a place now where we're recognizing that the social emotional aspect of teaching is just as important, if not more important, than what's actually being taught. I used to say to my students when I taught my methods course, right, that that community in that classroom trumps everything, that if you don't have a community that values the students in that classroom and takes what they bring to the room as important and meaningful and mediating actually what's getting through, what we call the affective filter actually goes up. So that affective filter is really it's the sense of, almost think of it like a permanent screen that goes up between a student and a teacher. If that student is devalued or bullied or feeling unsafe or feeling insecure in that classroom, you could be the best pedagogical role model ever standing up in front of that class doing these amazing things. But once that effective filter goes up, nothing's getting in. So if students don't feel safe and they don't feel like the classroom is a welcoming experience for them, a place where they can explore and, you know, be who they are and think about their place in the world and feel comfortable with their fellow students, that great pedagogy, those great instructional practices are worthless. So,
and for the students that get all A's but don't learn about social emotional intelligence, chances are they're not going to succeed.
No, and they keep saying, you know, they call these things, and it's the worst term, I think, the soft skills. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see this a lot in EduSpeak now, that we have to focus on the soft skills. And what they mean are skills in collaboration and creativity and critical thinking and communication. And so it's the soft skills, meaning they're not a hard discipline, they're not a set discipline. But it's sort of contradictory, because those are the hardest skills to actually teach. And so you think about what the business world and the community has been telling education for the past 20 years, is that those skills, being able to write and create and think critically and collaborate, those are the skills they're looking for across, right?
And to teach that, you know, I think you have to have it yourself. So one of the things that you're dealing with, you know, you get a kid who's makes all the qualifications, but they didn't have a good background in social emotional intelligence. How do you get through to them, the teacher, so they can really provide that learning experience?
I think that's a great question. You know, it's interesting that we spent – This year we were doing a project where we're trying to really better connect the School of Education with the community. And what we've done is we've done about 10, maybe 12 focus groups from superintendents down to families, and asking them what so if we were to ask you what you think those core 1, 2, 3 skills that every teacher must possess on day one, when they walk into that classroom, what would they be? And so we asked all these diverse groups, you know, homogeneous focus groups. We asked them, right, this. And what invariably is coming out, we're still processing and analyzing the data, but across those groups, you could see, right, that ability to collaborate with their fellow teachers, to create a classroom that was, right, safe, but actually intellectually and academically engaging, but still, right, relevant and safe for the students in that classroom, those rose to the top. And so what we're going to do with this, hopefully, is figure out a way to create sort of an observational tool so we can see in our students' teaching, when they're practice teaching, when they're up in front of a classroom, when they're up in front of their own methods class back at the university, what do those skills look like? What does it look like to say this? So Neil is coming through our program and he is developing these skills that really shows he knows how to get students engaged, every student in that classroom engaged and feeling welcomed and connected to the material, connected to their fellow students. What does that look like for a brand new teacher, for a day one teacher?
Yeah, you may need to do emotional intelligence boot camp before school starts.
So that's right.
So before you mentioned, and it was a throwaway line, but it's really an important part of the whole debate now about schools. You mentioned charter schools. Mm. And charter schools, for some, is just a way of avoiding the problem, is that it's taking some of the best kids and putting them in a place that you can really focus on giving them an education that leaves everybody else out. Mm. What is your view on charter schools?
Well, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about charter schools. Charter schools are public schools, right? They work within a school district framework. And I think it can be done amazingly well. It's all dependent on how the charter is written. So there are charter schools that write into their charter that they will have a particular demographic, that they will include second language learners, that they will work with kids across the needs spectrum. We have an amazing charter school connected to Cal State Channel Islands, University Prep Charter School, and their charter makes them one of the most inclusive schools and diverse schools in our area, in Camarillo. And so I think it's really an individual. It's up to that, how that charter is written. They can be written in ways that the school becomes a very almost private school setting, right? A very exclusive setting. But they can also be written in really powerful ways to include students from diverse backgrounds. And they can be written in ways that propel what we talked about earlier and focus on conceptual understanding and not the regurgitation of facts or, you know, taking tests at the end of the week and timed multiplication. They can be written in ways that do either of those things, right? That this is a charter school that's going to focus on quote unquote back to the basics, and we're going to have those kinds of, right, that kind of role and that kind of sort of traditional model. They can be written that way, but they can also be written in ways that is all about a growth mindset and thinking about students as those disciplinary learners. So,
you know, it seems, and I don't mean this to be to make you feel good, but probably will. When you look at the course load for any student, if a chemistry student, they have to learn chemistry.
Yes.
Or history, they have to learn history. But to be a teacher, you not only have to learn the subject, you have to learn how to deliver it in a way that's accessible and appropriate for the kids to get the most out of it.
Yes.
So it's almost like to be a teacher, you need double the effort.
Yeah.
And that's why they're, again, paid so much.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's right. I think, you know, and I think that's why you continually hear teachers described as lifelong learners, because they're constantly learning the new, right? What's happening in their field, what's happening in where they teach, especially if you think about elementary school teachers, they're teaching every content area. And I was one of those teachers. I was an elementary school teacher, and I definitely did not come into my first teaching experience being an expert in all 7, 8 content areas that I taught. And so you're constantly having to do that professional learning that keeps you alive and keeps you, you know, vibrant and thinking about, you know, different things in different disciplines. So, yeah, I think that's right. It's an amazing, amazing thing we ask of our teachers. And I wish, like you said, if the salary reflected that.
I learned this when I started, after I retired, I came out here and I taught for a number of years at City College. And I found the first year to be incredibly difficult because I thought I knew the subject. I have an MBA. I did it. To teach, it's not about knowing it. It's about really knowing it.
Yeah.
And in order to explain something, you know, you kind of intuitively know something that you learn in school and you can use it.
Yes.
But you don't really know what makes it go. And so I had to really relearn what I thought I knew in order to teach it well.
Yeah.
And that got me a whole new respect for the whole idea of teaching.
That's right. You know, it's interesting that we have a similar parallel about so when I was a student teacher, you know, you have a mentor student teacher. You have a mentor teacher, so the classroom teacher. And some of the best, most amazing mentor teachers, best teachers in the classroom, right? You're watching them teach these fourth graders, and they're incredible, incredible, incredible. But being a mentor to a new teacher, that's something they've never been trained to do. Mm-hmm. So my mentor teacher, she was incredible to watch her teach. Mm-hmm. But she had no skill in telling me how to do, right? She knew teaching so well, but how she could help a new teacher understand that, she had to learn that skill.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with Dr. Brian Sevier, Dean of the School of Education at Cal State University, Channel Islands. So tell us about the teacher residency program. You're only one of two CSU schools in the system that actually offer this.
Well, we're not, it's not about offering right now. So we were one of two, us and Cal State LA. We were chosen by the National Center for Teacher Residencies to participate in a year-long consultancy on building or sustaining a residency. So over the next year, we're going to be working with Cal State LA and with NCTR, the center, to develop a really robust and sustainable residency program in the School of Education.
Okay, and what does the word residency program mean?
Residencies have been around for a while. The data and the research on them is getting stronger every year. So essentially, so if you look at my student teaching experience, I student taught for a semester. I was with a teacher for a semester and then into my own classroom. In a residency model, students are with the teacher. So our students, our teacher candidates, they are with a teacher from the day the teacher reports back. So in the next week or two, teachers start reporting back for schools, and they stay with that teacher for an entire year. Across that year, in a really robust residency program, the candidate will attend parent-teacher conferences. They'll go to special ed meetings. They'll work on the playground, all the things that a teacher does.
They're shadowing the teacher.
Yeah, and so the research has shown consistently when you do residency well, mm-hmm. And you're really connected with your community partners, mm-hmm. meaning your school districts, those new teachers come out of the program more like second year teachers, mm-hmm. and not first year teachers. The turnover rate, the retention rates for teachers who come out of residency, it's amazing the difference between students who go through sort of traditional student teaching experiences and students who go through residencies. It's a whole new world. So it's really about deep, deep experience in the classroom. So they come out and when I got my teaching license and I started teaching, I had never gone to a teacher staff faculty meeting. I had never spoken to parents. I had never been asked to talk to parents about how is Neil doing in your class. I had no idea how to talk to parents. We spoke about that earlier, the importance of parents and their connection to classrooms. And going to a special education meeting and talking about, how the student's doing and why. I mean, no experience at all.
So these teachers, though, have to be special to be able to, because if you get to the wrong teacher, you're going to learn.
The
mentor teacher, you've got to be to make sure that they're the right people.
That's why I said the residency really depends on the connection you have with the school district. So we'll be working with VCOE, Ventura County of Ed, and other school districts to really start connecting up those mentor teachers, really helping us figure out who the best match is, mentor teacher and mentee.
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, this works in every area. I was on Wall Street and I was a junior analyst with my own industry I was following. Mm-hmm. And after 2 years, they said, would you like to go backwards and become an assistant to one of the best guys in the country we just hired? And you'll basically carry his briefcase for 2 years. And I said, yeah, I will. And everyone thought I was nuts, and I learned everything from him.
Yeah.
And so I can't tell you how important it was to be able to stand next to someone that knows what they're doing.
Yep, a true apprenticeship model, that's what a residency is.
Yeah. So. Anyway, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you, too.
You've been so powerful in your discussion about what it takes to be a good teacher. I think I'm going to enroll.
Great. I'm on down.
You think I'm too old?
No, never too old.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've been listening to Brian Sevier, who's the Dean of Education at CSU Channel Islands. This has been AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.